Hello and welcome to another episode of The Meaning of Life and Such. I'm your host, Haya Kamps, and I try to chip away at the question of who we are, why we're all here, and what it all means. If that sounds a little bit vague, then, well, you try coming up with a better description of what this is all about. Notes on a postcard, please. In any case, here's our new deep dive into life, the universe, and everything. Let's roll tape. So, welcome to another episode of The Meaning of Life and Such. I am joined here with a dear friend of mine. And we had a bit of a preamble last week when we met in person for the first time in forever to this. And I sense that I'm just so excited about having this conversation. So, you glorious angel, what is your name? What pronouns do you use? And where in the world are you?
My name is Jared Beyer. I go by he, him, and his, and I am currently in Reno, Nevada, which has become my new home as of about 2.5 years ago. So, I still pinch myself sometimes thinking I'm in Reno, crazy. And I'm excited to be here this morning. So thanks for doing this, Haya. Thanks for reaching out. Thanks for taking the time to put this together. It's just such a beautiful concept.
Yeah, it's just going to be such fun. It's such a fun invitation. I like to start these interviews with the same question to everybody, which is, how did we meet and what is your first memory of me?
We met through the Human Awareness Institute doing a workshop in north of San Francisco. I can't remember where it was exactly. But it was funny. The first time that we met, we were in a big group of people. And I remember meeting you and spending an amazing weekend together. But the memory of you really was connecting the second time we did a workshop together. And we were really able to just connect, and I really got an amazing sense of who you are, and I love that we've been friends ever since. And that was what, maybe 2 years ago? Does that sound about right?
Going on 2 years, yeah. It's funny, and so you've kind of been there for a lot of my. I've been doing a lot of like what I like to think of as just personal growth work. Who am I and where do I want to be in this space, and a lot of that work is really challenging because it turns out in really looking at the mirror deeply, sometimes you find things you don't like. And sometimes you discover that there's stuff that really needs some hard work. And I feel this incredible kinship with people who have been there along the way helping do that work. So, you know, thank you.
You're welcome and thank you. I think of, how much growth I've gone through in the last 2 years too, and you being a part of it and just the conversations we've had and the support that you've given just by lending an ear. And so I am truly grateful. I just feel so blessed for our friendship. So thank you.
Yeah. I also know that we've both been in a huge amount of transition and change and evolution. And, I feel like we're both in the middle of figuring our shit out, which is a gift. And, as I can't remember who it is, but somebody in the workshop room who loves to say yet another fucking learning opportunity. It feels like there's a lot of that going around. How do you know where to put your focus? Like, where do you, like, of all the thousands of things you could be putting your attention on for improvement about yourself or your world or the wider world, how do you choose?
That's a great question. And wait, before I jump into that, I love how you just said, like, we're both in the space of figuring our shit out. And immediately I was thinking, hey, it's like FOSHO. Can we come up with like a new term, like figuring our shit out?
FOSHO.
Man, for sure. I'll start by saying this. I have always been a doer. Like, I spent most of my life just like trying to plow through things to make things happen. And the younger me, I'm, in my early 40s now, and me in my 20s living in New York City, I felt like that's what I needed to succeed. it was just like, how do I grind? And at this later stage right now, what it doesn't come naturally to me, what I'm really working on is this idea of being and being okay with not having everything figured out and being okay with just not knowing where to put my focus or my energy. And I think a lot of it has been just kind of just acceptance, you know, in that. And it's scary and exciting at the exact same time. But I wake up every day thinking, you know, I'm alive.
Yeah.
How do I want to show up today in the world? And that's kind of where I'm starting from each day.
Yeah. It strikes me something when you're describing that, you're describing something very specific, a process that doesn't have a specific goal in mind, and where the journey is actually the purpose of it. There's a word for that. It's called play.
I love it.
I feel like play is the only thing we have, which is a experience that you have on your own or that you share with someone that doesn't have a specific goal in mind. The playing is the playing. And you can travel that way, you can live that way, you can work that way, but it's play. And so what it sounds like you're describing is that you're approaching life in a playful way.
Yes. Yeah. And it's funny that I've been having a lot of conversations with friends about this recently. It's like, when did we lose that? When did we stop playing like when we were kids? Mm-hmm. And it's funny that the more that I ask that question and the more I think about it, the more that it also pops up as I listen to audiobooks or read other articles. And it is, it's like we've totally forgotten about it. And so I recently did some intentions of what I'm looking to create. And one that was, you know, top of the list was to play, to have more fun in my life, not take things, you know, so serious. And yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, and I feel like there is, if you know, or how do I put this? There's two ways of navigating, right? One is knowing where you're going and, setting that as your goal and then moving in that direction. An example would be you see a mountain in the far distance and you're going to get there. The good thing is you can meander as much as you want because you can always see the mountain. So you can always be moving towards where you're going, right? You can do detours. You can do weird things on the way. You can even move in the wrong direction for a bit, but you know where you're going. The other way of navigating is by using a compass heading, right? I'm going to 102 exactly. The problem with that is any sort of tiny deviation or any like measuring difference, the further you travel, the farther you get off course, because it's impossible to travel exactly 102 the whole time. And my sense is that a lot of people go through life traveling with a compass. They go, oh, this is the direction I'm moving. So they know the direction, but they don't necessarily stay true to the course because that's literally impossible. But also because they don't know specifically where they're going, they end up in the wrong place. Or they get frustrated that they don't get to where they thought they were going, but they just didn't have a North Star, or they didn't have a mountain they're moving towards. And so in designing your life and in designing like making big life decisions, I feel like you kind of need that North Star. But it's really fucking hard to come up with essentially a mission statement for your life, you know?
Yeah. You got me thinking about a bunch of things, just like from how we also go through life from this like conventional path. And so I love this whole concept of being committed to something and not attached, right? So you can be committed to getting to the top of the mountain, but not attached to how you end up there. And that's kind of more the way that I've been trying to live my life, because then it's, you know, otherwise I've got all these expectations that aren't met, or that might not be met, I should say, you know, and that creates disappointment. You know, I'm supposed to be here at this specific stage in my life, or I'm supposed to be here, you know, I'm supposed to get to this camp, camp two by Friday at 4 p.m. I don't know. I don't have a mission statement for my life. I think that what I do, what resonates with me is, you know, how can I learn and grow? Like if I'm here to learn and grow and I'm here to experience life in my body as Jared, you know, how can I have as much fun doing it? How can I learn? How can I connect with as many people as possible? I know that I'm definitely not meant to be stuck in an office all the time and that be what defines me. There was, when you were just asking that question, I was reminded of a conversation that I had with one of my old roommates. We've known each other for 20 years, college roommate. And I remember, I remember at one, I got a frog in my throat, jumped in this morning.
It happens.
It does happen, yeah. So I was reminded of a conversation with my with a friend of mine that I've known for 20 years. And at what point I took like about almost a year and a half off to travel around the world. And like to him, that was like the strangest, craziest thing that I ever did. And, you know, I told him, I was like, look, I need a change. And I was, remember at the time I was like looking at my boss and I was like, I know that I don't want that. Like, I don't want that person's life. And there's nothing wrong with it because it might be great for that person, but it wasn't the life that I wanted. And I took a break to kind of hit a reset and go travel and experience other cultures. And I remember my friend saying like, he could have never imagined himself doing that because it didn't work into his plan. He was always the kind of person that, you know, he had to have a, even in school, like a specific internship lined up that would then get him to the next place, right? It was like kind of what you were saying. He was navigating through compass bearings instead of just being like, you know, I envision my life this way. How I get there, I don't know, but I want to stay true to that. And like, to me, that seemed like the strangest thing, right? I can't live my life the way that he was doing it. There's so much pressure, and I've and I watched some interesting ups and downs as a result. So
yeah, totally. And you specifically mentioned that you are trying to figure out how to be Jared in your body, which I think is an interesting, I mean, I am drawn to that because I don't really care if I'm in my body or not. You know, I love being super cerebral. I love floating around thinking about big stuff and my body just kind of being there as an incidental, you know. It gets in the way when it needs water and when I need to go pee. And other than that, I'm perfectly happy just being in my body. And I have recently discovered that being in my body feels really amazing. And I know that you're a yoga instructor, right? So you have an above usual commitment to the bodiness of your existence. I'd love to learn more about, you know, that feels like a big commitment to something. Are you committed or attached to yoga?
I'm committed to the practice of yoga, both for myself, and, you know, and being out in community, but I'm not attached to how that shows up, right? Mm-hmm. How I do my practice. I'm not committed to how long I do my practice, what types of, you know, yoga or how I choose to do it. So I'm not attached to that, but I'm committed to, I'm committed to at least the yogic path. You know, I wake up each day and I've got my own morning routine and practice. And when I have the ability to teach, I teach. It was interesting when you were just talking about the body, because it was making me think like, you know, I am a soul. I believe that I am, you know, a soul experiencing this life in Jared's body. And I'm not Jared.
Right.
Kind of crazy to wrap your head around it. And it takes me times looking in the mirror, you know, and really just kind of grasping that whole concept. But I believe in reincarnation.
So you're currently wearing a Jared suit.
I'm currently wearing a Jared suit. It's one way to put it. Yeah. And I think that that goes back into your, you know, your whole question or statement around fun, that it's like, then how can I have fun in the Jared suit? You know, why do I have to be so serious about everything in the Jared suit? And can I use this opportunity to get to know me really well?
Right.
You know, by, while not being hard on myself. I think that's been like a big, you know, a big journey.
So when you say me in that sentence, do you mean the soul that lives in the Jared suit or the Jared suit?
When I, you mean as far as being hard on myself, that question, that?
Yes. And getting to know yourself.
And getting to know myself. I think it's both. I think it's the recognition of the soul and getting to know me in my Jared suit. Yeah. It's funny. I've never really thought of it as a Jared suit, but that's it's a great way to a great way to think about it. I just, you know, I put it on at birth and I'll take it off at death. And right. During this time, I will wear the Jared suit and have fun with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a gift, right? I mean, the suit you are given, you know, you can make some amendments to it, but generally that's the hand you are dealt, right? And I have noticed in myself that for the longest time, I was not particularly happy with the suit I was given. And acceptance, like, turned out to be a really powerful tool and say, hey, you know what? I can sit here and be mopey about, you know, who I am and what I look like, or I can just accept, like, this is who I am. This is what I look like. Now, within those parameters, how can I maximize X, where X is, you know, any number of possibilities, any number of activities that I can do very well with this suit.
We, I was just thinking to a lot of our conversations we've had in the past, just about accepting ourselves and others, and really being seen and connecting. I mean, I think acceptance is like the first part of, let's say, change, you know, and filling up what I like to think of as like your love cup, you know, before you can then go out and play and experience other stuff and really truly connect with other people and accept them for the way that they are, right? If you're not accepting who you are and where you are, you know, at your stage, and it's tough. Like, I go through, and there's definitely days where I'm like, I am clearly not accepting myself, and that's part of the whole process as well, too. You know,
or you throughout the day, right? Then you have to be accepting of that too.
Yeah, that's why it's damn a it. Practice. Well, then you think about, you know, you asked me that question about, you know, yoga and being committed and attached, and I think it's, you know, I'm committed to acceptance, and I'm not attached to when it's happening. So, you know, when I just feel really grateful that when I have that awareness that I'm able to be like, oh yeah, I'm being hard on myself. I'm not accepting myself, or I'm not accepting someone else, and I'm judging myself, or I'm judging someone else, or I'm actually what you said too. I'm judging the Jared in my Jared suit, right? Yeah. Cause I think my soul truly knows all this stuff, but it's like I'm clouded by all the other crap that's around me. Right.
So our bodies have a lot going for them.
Hell yeah. You know,
we have big emotions, we have big drives, we have passions, we have arousals, we have so many things that bodies just do that, you know, I don't know if that is necessarily something that the soul would have optimized for. And that is great, you know. So I would love to learn more about, you know, and feel free to steer us in a different direction, but I'm curious because I don't really know many people who have actually committed a chunk of their life to yoga. And I would love to learn a little bit about how you came to it and what it does for you now.
Oh, such a great question. I'm so happy you asked that question, actually. How I got introduced to yoga, I was probably about 20 years ago, and I was in New York City, and I just was looking for yoga classes. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I was feeling stressed at work. I feel like that's usually the reason why I end up taking a yoga class. And I was searching for yoga centers, and somehow I got connected to Shivananda organization. And for those of you that know Shivananda, I mean, it's not your typical gym yoga that I feel is like popping up. I mean, it is the way that I see it is, I mean, it is a practice of yoga. You know, I went to their center and I got introduced to meditation, and you know, what we think of as yoga is, or a lot of people think of it is the asana, that, you know, the postures, and that was part of it as well too. But and philosophy that I really enjoyed, and a part of me just felt at peace. That's probably a great way to put it. And I kind of went on and off, you know, to their center to do some classes when I could, but I essentially have been practicing for about 20 years. It's made such a huge impact on my life, though. I think that, I mean, everything from meditation in the morning, which is a daily practice of mine, I think allows me to kind of wake up and kind of take on the world. And I think a lot of the awareness that I'm having in my day-to-day life is a direct result of that. Even my diet, you know, I think Shivananda introduced me to a vegetarian diet, and I actually eat vegan now after doing my yoga teacher training. But it's such a huge part of my life. It's funny. It's a big part of my life. It's not my identity. Like, I don't, you know, tell people, hey, like, my life, I am a yoga teacher and I'm committed to doing that. It's more of like, I'm committed to living a specific lifestyle and being fluid with that, right? Knowing that there's days that, like, I might not do my practice, or I might not do it for a week or a month, and I'm totally fine with that. And that goes back to, like, the, you know, the self-acceptance, that meeting myself where I am at that moment. But I definitely feel way more connected to myself and others as a direct result of it. It's the one thing that's allowed me to slow down. So I'd mentioned before about kind of, you know, my earlier, or the way, not only my earlier life in New York, but how I've generally shown up each day is like, how am I going to conquer? And, or how am I going to plow my, you know, my way through things? And this is the only practice that's allowed me to just, like, slow down and to truly connect with myself. And that is just so beautiful. You know, when I was living in San Francisco, and I think we talked about this before, but I basically had this, you know, moment where I just had to hit the reset button. Wasn't enjoying my work and the life that I had created there. And I decided to go do my teacher training in Thailand at an amazing school called Samakaruna, that was, you know, they call themselves a healing and awakening center. And that's really what I felt. And so ever since that, I mean, I feel like that's been a huge catalyst to how I show up in the world. And, you know, we're talking about meaning of life. It healed me and it helped awaken me to what's important, I think. So I feel very blessed about how yoga has shown up and the path that I've been on. It's really important to me.
I think that adds a whole bunch of context, and I'm very grateful, and it feels a little abstract.
Okay.
And I guess maybe it needs to be. It's kind of hard to express, like, in a specific... But I guess, how are you different, like, before and after a session of yoga? Like, how does that impact your day or your life?
Yeah, it helps me get centered for the day, in a nutshell. So I'm carving out about an hour and a half to 2 hours in the morning, and I have never been a morning person, so this has been a big change for me to get up early. And I do a mix of, you know, I've got several things that I do in the morning, and I believe that the best practice, there is no perfect practice. The best practice is the practice that you do, that you enjoy doing, whatever that looks like for you. And for me, it's a combination of meditation and some yoga asana. So, the postures. And then I sit and journal, and I do a little bit of reading. And to me, I feel so much more clear-headed. I think if I didn't do it, or the older me would be waking up, and I feel like this is so typical with just most people in Western, you know, countries, waking up with, like, my mind racing of all the meetings that I have, all the things that I have to get done during the day. And I probably would have checked my phone first thing in the morning. And I'm operating from this place of, like, stress, you know, or anxiety, of how do I survive the day? So I think really the key thing is it gets me grounded, you know, by doing my practice. I don't check my phone, you know, for a couple hours, and I just connect into me, right? It's, hey, I'm back in my Jared suit, and I've got a mirror actually that is kind of where I've got a nice little kind of like yoga room or section of my house, and I've got a mirror there, and I look at myself and I try and connect into myself and seeing Jared in the Jared suit and being really grateful for waking up and taking on a new day, saying, you know, my mom likes to say this, like, yippee, I'm alive, right? And that to me is part of a yoga practice, right? Even saying something like that, you know, being very mindful. So, if I don't do that, I am surviving and struggling is what I found throughout the day.
I have spent so much time kind of thinking about, things I know to be true. You know, I have a list on my desk here that just says truths at the top, and it's got a whole list of things going down. And I was thinking about whether or not those truths are universal, right? Or whether they are my personal truths. And I'm realizing that there's no such thing as universal truth. But I also had this other realization, is that sometimes, you know, popular culture is trying to get you to connect with something that is a universal truth. And I was wondering, how does, you know, on the assumption that your attention is what you have and the things you fuel is what grows, right? Well, if those two things are true, and I think there's a pretty good chance that that is true. It's the whole story of the two wolves, right? If you fuel the wolf of jealousy, that's the one that grows. If you fuel the wolf of kindness, then that's the one that grows. There's the puppy dog. But I was thinking about, like, if we think about voting with our time, voting with our dollars, voting with our attention, there are a few big breakthrough cultural things that just are so at the forefront and that we are fueling that. And I wrote down in big letters at the bottom of my sheet here, "Let It Go." If you think about it, in Frozen, that song has been played to death, right? And we can have a whole discussion about whether or not it's a good song. I'm not particularly a big fan. But the phrase "let it go" is repeated so loudly and so often throughout, and it has reached such a huge touchstone for so many people, especially young people. And I was like, would my life have been different if I had grown up with Frozen and "Let It Go" was like so at the forefront of my mind, because it's just permeated through culture so deeply? Because it's been one of the things that I've been really, really bad at. And I feel like if I went and stood like 3 inches away from you, face to face, and just said, "Jared, focus," and then did nothing, like just stood there and stared at you, at some point, you would have to wonder what I meant, right? If I just stood there, imagine I just didn't move. "Jared, focus." And you could stand there for hours and wonder what I meant. Or you could take a slightly more Zen approach and realize, you know what? It doesn't have to mean anything. What does it mean to me in this moment? And the only way you can break away from that thought pattern is to let it go, because you're not going to get the answer you need from me or from the situation. And as humans, we get stuck so often obsessing about things or obsessing about thoughts or obsessing about what other people think of us, that the greatest gift we can give ourselves is just let it the fuck go. And it was so funny when I had that revelation at some point, like, I just need to let it go. And I was like, what kind of an idiot am I that Disney has put out a film where the center fucking message is let it go and it still don't let it sit in? But so many people have voted with their money and with their attention to let that message bubble to the forefront, and I still don't let it set in. In my arrogance, I ignored everybody else's votes. And I think actually that is what popular culture is. It's a vote towards what the right thing is. It's how we end up with sayings or like pithy little, you know, "it'll all be okay in the end," you know, stuff that sounds like mundane crap. But if you spend 20 seconds thinking about it, you're like, wait a minute, these sayings exist to help us. These are wisdoms that have been passed down from generations. And sitting with them, it would behoove us. They've stayed around for this long, not as a joke, but because they have a truth in them.
I'm with you. I wonder how many people actually really got that from Frozen, or that maybe they heard it at the time and it made sense and they just forgot about it. It's, you're right. So much of suffering is a direct result of our attachment to something, right? Our expectations, and we're constantly being disappointed. And so how can you let it go without overanalyzing it or just accepting it for where you are? I was thinking, as you were saying, you know, I was picturing you coming up to me and saying that, and me just staring at you, right? And just kind of being in that moment of true connection with you, and letting go whatever thoughts were in my mind maybe at that time. And I'm sure something would have come up at that moment too of, am I doing it right? Am I doing it right?
Right. Jared,
yeah. Am I doing it right?
Am I focusing? Am I focusing enough?
Yeah. Oh, damn. My mind's going somewhere else.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I said to let it go. I'm disappointing him. I'm disappointing myself. It is so funny how there's like Disney and just cartoons in general can put out some, like I've seen some pretty amazing, profound statements and things come through, like the movie Soul. Wow. And I think that my experience is you are where you are and it's perfect in that moment, right? And what I mean by that is there was probably a stage in my life where you would have said, let it go, and I just wouldn't have been able to hear it or understand it. And I'm at this stage now where I can, and I'm, you know, it's still this evolution and I'm still working on it. There's lots of times I'm sure that I miss it. And I think other people are, you're right, like society puts out these big statements that are pretty true, I would say. You're right, like about, you know, these sayings that have like lasted through time. And I...
Yeah, and some of them don't really connect, right? We don't really need the real Slim Shady to stand up.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. That's funny. But I think people are where they are, right? And at some point, maybe they are open then to be able to hear that whole concept of letting it go. And they might. And some people might not ever get there, right? Meeting people with where they are. I guess I think about this a lot too. And, you know, when we talk about the meaning of life, or people talk about this whole concept of, you know, being awake and being asleep. And I think that there's sometimes judgment can be added. You know, people will be like, well, I'm awake and you're asleep. And, you know, I definitely don't want to, kind of keep that going. But I guess it just goes back to, you know, people are where they are, right? And it's accepting them for maybe they are happy with, you know, with a specific outcome in life, and they don't ever question their meaning, right? And that's totally fine with where they are. You know, the flip side of kind of that, I guess, like for me, the flip side of being aware of what am I doing? Why am I here? What's my purpose? I mean, that also can cause a little bit of anxiety and stress for me as well too, right? To try and get it right, to not waste every minute of being on this planet or being in my Jared suit. And that causes a whole other, bunch of issues at times too, that I then get to let go when I remember. So there you go.
Well, I feel like in meditation and in occasional other contexts, I feel like being in flow state where things feel just so relaxing and so right, because you're doing, like, you're at peak performance, your focus is 100%, you're there, you're present, you know, it's in those moments it's almost impossible to enter into my universe, right? If I'm really focused in a book, you can stand next to me and shout my name and I'm just in that book.
Hiya.
Yeah, exactly.
Dinner's burning. Hiya.
Yeah. Why is the house on fire? Yeah, that's because dinner's burning. Yeah, got it. And you can't spend your entire life there, right? Like sexually, people chase orgasms, but you can't be in a state of orgasm your whole time, right? And in meditation, you seek that deep, deep, deep peace, or I do anyway, where everything just kind of falls away and there's this moment that happens in me where it feels like something shifts physically in my body and I just feel this calm just wash over me. And it is the most wonderful feeling. And I can't stay there forever either, right? Eventually my body protests and like, hey, dude, my back hurts, or I've got to go pee, or, you know, the rest of the world is waiting. And so I wonder what that transitionary space is. Like, where is that deep moment of like connection with yourself, with the universe, or what have you? Where that even comes from, and how that even lands with us.
I think it's the moment that you stop thinking through everything. And what I mean by that is just being able to experience whatever it is you're doing in that moment. And you transcending the mind at that point, right? No mind. I mean, that's the flow state for me. The times that I've experienced that has been more so doing action sports, funny enough. Like I one of the reasons I moved up to Reno was to be so close to Lake Tahoe. And skiing and snowboarding and powder, you know, it is, I am so in the moment so that I don't mess up or hit a tree or do something stupid. And I've gotten into, and it's no mind, right? I'm not thinking about my laundry list of things that I have to do that day. I'm not thinking about business meetings. And you're right. The meditation is another way for me to get to that space too. I have been working towards is kind of the wrong way to put it. I will say as a direct result of meditation, I have been experiencing more flow in just everyday interactions. And that is like being truly present in conversations, driving, walking. And to me, that's where the magic starts happening is how do I start integrating this into like my everyday life when I'm awake, right? When I'm just being. And then I catch myself drifting off again. And the beautiful thing is that recognition is I'm able to be aware and bring it right back again if I can, you know. But that's the change that I've been seeing in myself. I think before it was, I never truly I was seeking out this no mind or flow state, doing certain activities and not really understanding kind of how and why. And now I do. And that awareness has been really beautiful for me.
Hmm. And so what I'm hearing you say is that this is a state that you can't really get to if you're looking for it. Is that right?
I guess. Yeah. Right. Cause then you're thinking with your mind and you're trying to achieve something.
Right.
As opposed to just experiencing it and recognizing it. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think it's training to just be, which is hard. One of my favorite meditations that I love doing is just the five senses. You know, for those of you listening, if you don't know what that is, it's, I mean, think of your senses, right? And being able to go through each one as you sit down with your eyes closed. And to me, that gets me really connected in and gets me out of my mind. And then I try and do some of those things when I'm out in the day. So when I'm walking, you know, with my dog, I'm trying to listen, you know, for different sounds. I'm trying to feel, could be the wind on my skin or the, you know, the rocks underneath my feet. And that is just, anyway, so I guess in that way I am intentional and I am like looking to do something to get me to this place. Mm-hmm. But it definitely, it involves being as opposed to like trying to force, you know, a certain way.
Yeah. So you mentioned reincarnation and the soul a couple of times.
Yeah, I guess I did.
You did. I am curious if you have any sense of where that soul has been and where it is going, like and post the jiaotsu.
Yeah. I need to just think about this for a moment. That's a big, beautiful question. You know, there's been moments in my life where I've experienced things. And they could be doing something, connecting with people where I just have this sense of coming home. And it's not like I've had these dreams of I can remember exactly who I've been in past lives. Like that's not where I'm going with this. It's more that like I got introduced to kirtan, which it's a practice, you know, it's a group singing Sanskrit mantras, and it's part of bhakti yoga. And the first time that I just joined a kirtan, I just started to weep. And my soul felt like it was coming home, that I'd been there before, that I had done this many times. And I mean, there's no question. So that's kind of where I feel sometimes like this, you know, where my soul's been, you know, and it's coming home. And I feel like a lot of it is just like, to use the analogy of a dream and waking up, is just that I've been, you know, asleep, and I'm using this lifetime just to kind of remember. What was the other part of that question? Where is it going? I can't remember. Sorry.
Yeah. Remind me. Yeah. Like if you have a sense of where it's like, what happens after, the Jared suits, takes his final breath and, drifts off. Like where does it go?
So I believe that we, you know, we're all connected. We're all energy created and coming from the same place, that we just kind of end up back in this collective consciousness, you know, out there in the ether. At least that's where I'm at right now. My viewpoint could change. I definitely feel that we're all connected, and, you know, and I've had, you know, I had a family member pass away recently, and I was thinking about this, my aunt, and, you know, my hope is just that, you know, she or her soul or whatever that is, you know, is just back connected to everybody, you know? So I definitely believe that there is something after me wearing a Jared suit. And I think the beautiful thing about that too is that I'm not scared of death. It does also kind of remind me of like, how do, you know, talk about the meaning of life, like how do I get to then experience me in a Jared suit in this lifetime, and not from a place of fear, right? From a place of love or a place of creation. And that's been kind of my guide. You asked about a guiding star. I think that's really what it is these days. And at some point it's going to end, which is, by the way, I just have to say, is so strange that I'm at this place right now in my life, because I think as like a 6-year-old or a 5-year-old, I have really vivid memories of being so scared of dying. Like I like so fearful. And I think it in a weird way, it's also driven me. It has driven me to do a lot in my life. I sometimes joke with friends that I've had, you know, 42 different lives in my 42 years on this earth. I've done so much, and I feel really blessed about that. So it's also kind of this nice thing where I feel at peace, I think, with the idea of death, where I didn't as a little kid.
I was thinking the other day about when. So I agree. I think we are a soul or a spirit or something that exists independent of our bodies. I am rezzing in on the idea that there is actually only one spirit, only one soul, and that soul is kind of cursed to live everybody's life at the same time and in parallel. I feel like that, if that is true, then you, your soul, the spirit living in the Jared suit and the spirit living in the higher suit, maybe this happens sequentially, right? Maybe I have been through this entire life and next I live in your suit, or vice versa. And that in a way we reincarnate and time travel to live through all these lives. But I feel like there is something really powerful in there when you think about how you interact with other people and how you're able to feel such incredible deep connections and such kinship and such beauty, but also how you're able to have empathy for people who are on a path that is extremely different from yours. This came up for me a lot politically recently when we had our previous president, Orange Fuck Muppet. And I was like, wow, you have to believe that people vote out of love, right? That they vote out of, they see something that they don't like about their lives, and they think that by voting the way they do, that thing will change. And that you, whether you do that out of fear or out of love, there is something to that where you are doing the best you can with the information you have available. And how our ability to have empathy with that, even though the impact of this particular president, I think, was incredibly damaging in ways that we don't fully understand yet. But there is something in there And I feel like that could be explained by us all being the same and all being connected. And so what I was thinking about is when did this spirit like move in? Was that at the point of conception? Was that at the point of birth? Was that quite a while after birth? And I think it doesn't really matter philosophically, but I think it is an interesting thought. Because it has some implications, right? About what is, like, at which point do souls start their journeys in a particular mitsu?
Yeah. There, I love this this idea. I know some people who really believe this, that, you know, you choose your next life or based on the lessons that you want to learn, right? Is this idea of your soul evolving. And so, you know, even that you're choosing your mother and your father and all of this based on, you know, on past lives or experiences. So, it's an interesting, you know, concept. And I guess maybe that's a way to, maybe create empathy, right? If you, in a previous life, let's say, you were against a certain group of people or whatever that might be. And then, you know, and then you were born into that group, right? To allow you to experience that. I don't know at what point you do. I mean, the whole thing is just so strange and odd to me. You know, sometimes it's funny that I try and rationalize or intellectualize it, and I just realize I can't. And but it is. I you brought up a really interesting point, though. This idea of, you know, empathy and the other, and I think that when you get to a point where you can see yourself in all things, that you are me and I am you, and it can be a big concept to wrap your head around. I think that helps to kind of create this empathy, and that the hurt that you do to yourself hurts others, and the hurt that you put on other people hurts you. And I get it, you know. And maybe this does go back to what you were saying, right? We're all from that same source, right? Pieces of it. I almost, like, when you were saying that, I was thinking of, like, we're all like these, like, little strands, you know, from one big thing. And we are all connected. So it's allowed me, at least at this stage in my life, to I mean, empathy is important to me. And I realize there's times I'm definitely, you know, I could be more empathetic and more compassionate. But just being aware of that, right, has been huge. And I believe that will help heal the world. Truly, you know, if we can accept ourselves first for who we are, and then accept others for who they are, exactly where they, you know, and meet them where they are.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there is something, meeting people where they are, I think is such a recognition of humanity. Because, you know, I guess some people who listen to this will know this. I used to be a policeman, and the number one thing I took away from that, I mean, I learned a lot of very hard lessons, but the number one thing I took away from that was, when you go into a situation, when somebody's called the police, that is probably their worst day in a while, maybe the worst day of their life, right? And so I might go into a house, like my third or fourth burglary for today, or I might, you know, deal with a missing kid or something like that. That to me is completely routine. You know, I know what to do. I know what statements to take. I know to call the CSI folks. I know what to do. To them, that is the worst fucking day they've had in a long time, or maybe in their life. Because, you know, most people don't like to call the police. Most people want nothing to do with the police. And that moment of empathy, like, taking a deep breath before you walk into somebody's life, into somebody's house or somebody's situation, and be of the realization, like, yes, I've dealt with two sexual assaults, a attempted murder, and all sorts of misery, but this burglary is a 10 out of 10 on somebody's scale. And having that empathy as you walk into a situation is exactly that, right? It's meeting people where they are. And I find it funny that I learned that in such a weird context, but it's been something that stuck with me super deeply, because you don't know what's going on in somebody else's life when you meet them casually. You know, that person who loses their shit and shouts at the barista at Starbucks, they probably don't hate the barista. There's something else going on. And leaving a little bit of empathy in the middle of that situation is hard, because, you know, you're inconvenienced that you don't get your coffee faster. But there's something beautiful in there of just taking a breath and letting people be people.
Yeah. And not making it about yourself. That's been the big practice for me, is realizing like someone could be angry at me, or at least expressing anger towards me.
Yeah.
And it might not have anything to do with me. You're right. Totally. Like, you know, what's going on? It's
you might just be the final drop.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. 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 The straw that breaks the camel's back and such. That's a funny expression.
Precisely. Well, and it's true, right? It's, there is one, you know, you can drip, you can use an eyedropper to drop buckets, drop water drops in a bucket. One of those drops will make the bucket overflow. And it's only one drop at a time. And I think that's how humans work. I think that's how the psyche works. We are so good at absorbing one drop at a time. But at some point, you're fully saturated. At some point, you overflow. And, you know, I've been there. It is a shitty universe to be in. But it's true. And other people have the same.
Yeah. I think we've all been there, right? At some point in our life, something has overflown to a point. I mean, I think anytime anyone's ever lashed out at somebody else, it's been that. And right. And what would be, I mean, can you imagine if we had got to that place where we just had that recognition that we could see it happening in someone else and say, oh, I've been there too. I remember what it's like when that last drop is making me overflow and I'm exploding, and be like, ooh, how can I hold space for that person and meet them where they are? Maybe everyone should become a volunteer policeman
it would be wonderful to have. I mean, it's like that thing about politicians, right? If you want to be a politician, you should be banned from being a politician. It's kind of a little bit the same thing with policing. If you want to be a policeman, you should kind of be banned from being a policeman. And I think the reason for that is that there's just mechanics at play there that are problematic. It's like, if you put yourself if you seek out a position of power, you do that for many reasons, right? And a lot of people are not pure about those intentions. And that makes it hard to trust those authority figures. Or I find that anyway.
I mean, you would probably know better than most people, because you were in those situations, right? Where you were dealing with people that either trusted you or didn't, right? And I would imagine sometimes they had to make a decision very quickly, depending on the situation. When you mentioned your policing days, I was just reminded, I was like, how inspiring your life is. And I love learning about it too. And I feel like you've lived 40 lifetimes in 40 years as well, from all the different things. And what's so beautiful, I mean, even this whole concept of the meaning of life, like, I really, like, I look at you and I see someone who has fully been a yes to life. And that is so inspiring. You know, to say like, how, I mean, I look at you and I'm like, wow, you've done so many different diverse jobs and lived in different places. So I want to acknowledge you for that. You're one of the few people I know that truly is excited. I feel excited about living life in a Hiya suit.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm literally the only person who's excited about living life in a Hiya suit. But also, I hear that and I feel like I'm definitely getting better at being present with that. And I think a gratitude practice goes a long way there. Forcing myself to meditate goes a long way. And yeah, it's a lot. So I did want to ask you one other thing, actually, which is, do you have some sort of like a mantra or a guiding principle that helps you when kind of the red mist comes down? And when you don't know where you are, what you're doing, what's next, when you're in a state of like imbalance.
Oh, wow. I feel so put on the spot to come up with something so perfect for everyone that's listening. You know, there's let it go, let it go. Every time I I think of the Frozen song, I am reminded of my friend's daughter, who's seven anyway. I had mentioned I went and did my yoga teacher training at Samakaruna over in Thailand, and there was a mantra or saying, I would just say, that like they, you know, that they introduced me to, that really just stuck, that I use a lot, and it's pretty simple. It is, it's basically everything is as it is. Mm-hmm. Everything is as it should be. Mm-hmm. The world needs and loves you. Mm. So really think about that, right? Everything is as it is. Like you can't change what is, right? So it's back to the acceptance, you know, and trying to get rid of suffering, with that. Everything is as it should be. I mean, that I think is the true acceptance part of it. And the world needs and loves you. And that's a big one, right? That like we are important, you know, and it has to start, or it doesn't have to, but it is, I think it makes a big difference if it starts from within, from yourself. The world needs and loves you. And if you can, you know, love yourself in any situation, in any moment, when that red mist is coming down, as you said, and you're blinded by it and you screwed up and did something bad, you know, with a partner or at work or whatever it is, and you can just, you know, forgive yourself and love yourself because the world needs and loves you, you know, we're here and everything is perfect. And that saying has gotten me through a lot. And I feel very grateful for being introduced to it.
That's gorgeous. I think that is a as good a place as any to wrap it up, Jared.
Thanks, Haya. Yeah, this has been fun. Really, really just appreciate you doing this. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.